So my name is Karan, and you know, today we're going to be talking about GPUs, GPUs, and more GPUs. So just a little bit about myself. That's my Twitter handle up there. So if you wanted to tweet, post, whatever, you can follow me there and ask me questions. Additionally, just a little trivia. I'm a Kiwi. That's basically slang for or a term for someone from New Zealand. And I work for the high-performance computing team in Azure, and I mostly work on infrastructure and services, platform services, so things like HPC, GPU are the sort of some of the things that I work on. So GPUs, you know, what's the fuss? Why is everybody talking about it? What's cool about them? What can they do? And what are people doing with them? You know, that's kind of the important question. We've obviously been talking about GPUs for a little while. You probably saw in a various set of keynotes, you know, Satya's been talking about AI. If you went to Jason Zander's session, he was showing off GPUs as well. From a strategic point of view, it's definitely quite important. And that's really, you know, pertaining to some of our partnerships that we've had, especially with NVIDIA. So we're gonna have a couple of speakers up here to showcase some of the really cool things that people are doing or are wanting to do with GPUs, and then we'll get into some demos. So I want to kind of talk about, you know, from a perspective of what's the fuss, meaning, you know, there's lots of industries out there that are utilizing GPUs today, whether it's on-prem, and are sort of shifting to the cloud. And so I really want to sort of take some time to give you an idea of, you know, how big these industries are and how GPUs are important to these industries. The first one you can see up here is gaming. You know, I've thrown some numbers up here, but you know, those are rough estimates. $20 billion. You know, obviously we've got the Xbox unit here, and so GPUs are really important in gaming. So if you're just an enthusiast or a student or whoever, and you're wanting to run some high fidelity games, GPUs, you know, help you there. If you're doing, if you're a SaaS provider, or if you're a organization that is doing some streaming, high fidelity gaming, that's going to be quite important for GPUs as well. And then we have workstations. This is a pretty interesting one, in fact. You know, if I'm an engineer, automotive engineer, I'm a scientist, I'm a designer, I'm an artist, creating the next generation car or designing the next generation car, or I'm in the visual effects movie studio, and I'm trying to create some digital assets, you know, I really want to be able to have a powerful workstation, you know, under my desk. That's no longer feasible because these things can get, you know, really, really expensive. And so Azure provides that capability with the GPU where you'll be able to launch these VMs, put whatever hardware accelerated applications on them, and really utilize the power of some of the GPUs underneath the covers. So, you know, again, if I'm running, you know, engineering applications, crash applications, you obviously saw Jason's keynote a couple of days ago where he showed off Esri. So those are the kind of things that we're able to do. And again, this market is growing and people are, you know, wanting to work from anywhere in the world. So you can just launch a VM, run your stuff, create your designs, and then you're done. And then the one that I really, you know, that's really of interest is automotive. Automotive has seen a crazy explosion over the last couple of years where, you know, you're seeing companies like Tesla and some of the other companies do automotive, sort of autonomous automotive work. So, you know, if a car needs to know if there's a pedestrian in front of it, or it needs to detect what kind of objects are in front of it, they need to do all sorts of things such as deep learning. And GPUs and one of our offerings will sort of help you with that. So autonomous driving and autonomous cars, you've probably heard it all over the news, is a big deal, especially in the next couple of years. So automotive companies require GPUs and large amounts of it for that. So we've had our GPU preview, you know, since early August, I think. You know, we've been talking about it. We've had it for the last couple of months, and you know, we've just seen kind of a crazy, you know, sort of a crazy explosion of interest, so to speak. And we've just had a number of people do very interesting things. And so I'm just sort of throwing up a couple of the tweets that people have, you know, posted out there. You know, people are doing things like Photoshop, Unreal Engine, people are running crash simulations, people are doing deep learning, Photoshop, you name it. You know, the one end of the spectrum to the other end. And so we've had, you know, I'm not going to say numbers, but we've had thousands of customers, you know, use this service within a month, and we're still having more and more customers show interest, you know, in terms of using GPUs for their workloads. So this is just to sort of show some excitement. You know, somebody threw up a, you know, 1080p game running on an M60, single M60, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So this is really, really exciting to see. Kind of shows the power of what you can do on Azure now. So, you know, what is the offering? So the first half of that is really the compute offering, which is the K80. It's powered by NVIDIA's Tesla K80 GPUs. That's really sort of the bread and butter of, you know, the HPC scenarios or deep learning or AI. So some of the things you saw in Satya's keynote around, you know, the training mechanisms, you know, those trainings can require lots of compute intensive power. And so GPUs, the K80 is really great for that. To talk a little bit about what the VM sizes are, essentially it maps the 6 cores to 1 GPU. And the K80 is a dual GPU design, so it's a single physical card with 2 GPUs on it. We essentially split it up to give it to you for a VM. So you have essentially a single GPU, 2 GPUs, or 4 GPUs per VM. And that essentially means, or that equates to half a card, single card, two full physical cards. Again, then you have the memory, the disk, and the network. Additionally, at the end, what we have is a fourth VM size. So if you're doing things like deep learning, and you're stitching together jobs that take, you know, not just a single GPU, but multiple GPUs, not within even a VM, but multiple GPUs across VMs. So if you're tying together a job that goes across thousands of GPUs, thousands of nodes, you know, we've added a second backend network on the VM powered by InfiniBand. So that will get you super, super low latency, sort of under 3 microseconds between communication between a VM to a VM. So that's going to really help with some of the AI work that people are doing out there. So I'd like to sort of invite one of my first guests, special speaker, Sagar, who's going to showcase some of the cool stuff you know, we're doing out there with the GPUs. Awesome. So, Sagar, give us a little bit of an idea about, you know, what are these GPUs, why are they important, and, you know, what are some of the things that people are doing with these things?
Nope, now this is dead.
How about now?
There you go. Okay. Is that better? Perfect.
Yay.
Woohoo. So, yeah, Karan, thank you. So, GPUs, NVIDIA, what the key message, I mean, here is, he talked about this two types of offerings, right? There's a compute-focused offering, and there's visualization-focused offering. To start off with, the big thing about GPUs to be excited about is they're fast. So, you got the slides?
You're switched on to that. So.
Okay. Wait, hold on a second. I got it. So, one of the things to know is it's extremely fast. So, one of the things that it does is it enables teraflop computing for everybody. It basically makes it accessible for everyone. So, the first offering that Karan mentioned here is the K80. So just comparing it against a relatively fast CPU, you can see how this brings anything from like a 2 to 3 all the way up to like a 15x improvement. And so this is very important because a lot of work that goes on out there, whether it's HPC work, so that might be simulations with large sets of data, to applications such as deep learning, which is one of NVIDIA's big focus, which is around AI, which I'll talk a little bit more about. They require a large number of computations to get the fidelity you need to do your work. So the big story, one of the big pieces that the GPUs offer is speed. You get a fast time to solution, and your folks can actually get off the ground and making proof of concepts and
that's solutions. That's cool. So you know, we know it's fast. So yeah. What does fast mean? Like, what does that actually enable us to do from a perspective of, you know, if you're running some jobs, okay, I get some speed up, but what does that actually mean sort of in real terms?
Yeah, so here's an example of what speed brings to you. So speed lets your science, your work improve. So, you know, you talked a little bit about those scenarios like automotive and workstation. So the first graph you see on the leftmost side, ImageNet, this is around the recognition of a large set of data. And what you're seeing there is in between 2012 and 2013, you see where the GPUs from NVIDIA came into the picture, and you can see how the accuracy, the image recognition accuracy, has increased to the point where it's now surpassing a human. You know, don't forget, humans don't always get it right either. And so that's one example. You get better accuracy. The next one is pedestrian detection, which is another important scenario for automotive. So
that would be like a car that's moving along and needs to look at what's in front of it.
Yeah,
right?
avoid the people. And so what you're seeing here is the black dots are talking about more traditional computer vision techniques that were hard-coded mechanisms. And then you see the green dots, which is where deep learning AI has come in. And you could see that in a very short span of time, far faster than what it was with the computer vision techniques, the accuracy has shot up. And the last one is object detection, and that's with the Kitty data set. And you can once again see that GPUs are driving the top score there. So
this is like stuff. This is a fish. This is a dog.
Correct.
This is
exactly.
A
yeah.
Pen.
Or,
right.
or when you're in an automotive scenario, this is a speed limit sign. This is a traffic
Got it.
Light.
Okay.
This is So these are lanes. So. Yeah, so that's showing you kind of in slide format, but I thought instead of just showing slides, what I can do is actually give you guys real demos of how this stuff works. So,
all right, let me switch it over.
If everything works. Perfect.
There you go.
So the first one I'm showing here, this is a tweet map by MapD. This is running on K80 GPUs. And so what's really cool with this is what you're seeing here is I've geolocated it to the Georgia World Congress Center. And what you're seeing on those blue, these different dots speckled along the map are tweets. And so at the bottom, you can see it kind of corresponds to language. So we have English, undetermined, Norwegian. You could change that criterion to be looking at source, so you could see what's the operating system platform people are using. And what's really nifty is, and this is so you understand, right, this is looking at the number of tweets that people put out there. It's mining it. So what it's really taking advantage of on the GPU here is the extremely fast, first of all, the memory bandwidth that we have between the GPU memory and the core, and then just the sheer amount of compute horsepower. So then you can start seeing really quick visual analytics. So what I have over here is the range of the 25th to the 29th selected. And then obviously for hashtags, Ignite's gonna be ruling the roost. But what you can easily do, like if you're a data analyst, is you can shift that window over time and you could start seeing, okay, well, what were the previous events that took place at the Georgia World Congress Center? You can kind of see down over here, you see these little spikes. So you can very quickly manipulate the data and see what was the popularity of events. So like if you were maybe the people that run this venue, you can start seeing, all right, what are the type of things that bring in people? Where were the concentrations of folks more likely to be? Where did issues come from? Do we see tweets from a specific escalator where people are saying, help, I'm getting trapped here. We should have more bandwidth between buildings, that sort of thing. So it's just one sort of example on an interesting scenario. So GPU accelerated databases is what
this is. Sort of like data mining, right?
Correct.
Then in terms of sort of like maybe deep learning, you know, what's something that you can show off that's kind of deep learning based?
Yeah, so I'm going to show off Digits. So Digits is a open front end for frameworks created by NVIDIA. So let me explain a little bit, just a quick brief minute about deep learning and how it works, what it is for folks that may not know. So traditionally, like in deep learning, we talk about what it is that you have a large amount of data that you've collected, and you want to be able to action on it, and you don't necessarily want to hard code what you're looking for. You want to be able to let the data tell you what you should look for. So what you end up having in these scenarios is you have a portion that's called training, which is where you're feeding in this information with a certain amount of the data. Certain amount of the data has a ground truth to it. So what I'm going to be showing here is a demo on handwriting recognition. So I feed it in about 50,000 images, and a small percentage of that, I've picked around, I think 10%, it'll have a corresponding number between a handwriting sample and what the number is. Now that training portion is very, very computationally intensive. It's running through a large number of linear equations, trying to figure out how do I reduce my loss or maximize my accuracy. And then there's a second portion of it called inference, which is what happens in real time. So when you're on your phone and you're telling, hey Siri, take me to the convention center.
Or hey Cortana.
Yes, of course. To understand what's been said and to process it, it is basically looking at a model that's been trained, and it's running the process called inference.
This could be like my phone, and I'm saying, you know, whatever, and it sort of recognizes.
Correct, yep.
Or if I'm, even on an autonomous car, right, if I'm writing some stuff, it sort of recognizes what it is.
Exactly, yep.
Okay.
That's right. So what you see here, on the left-hand side, is this MNIST data set, which I have trained. And so what it's basically showing, this is just the database. What it does is it puts it into a format that the software can handle. The back-end framework I'm going to be using is called CAFE. And what this is just showing are the different numbers and the count of the number of samples that are inside of there. So I'm going to take this now, which has already been, I've had it set up, and I'm going to go and start the actual classification. So I'm going to point it to MNIST. The epochs is sort of the number of iterations which we're going through on it. Everything looks correct here. They're 28 by 28 images. They're grayscale. Everything here looks great. The algorithm stochastic gradient descent is a good one to use. I'm going to choose the Linet network. And you know what? I will just say let's use 4 because the box has 4 GPUs. And say create.
Just for the audience here, so that box is the NC24. So that's the one that's got the 2 full physical cards with the 4 GPUs.
Now what you're seeing here is, this is something that on the CPU side, if you have researchers or data analysts, if they were gonna go and run this process, this is something that would take a large portion of a day, weeks, sometimes even months. And what this is going to be doing, you could see the estimated time remaining is 2 minutes and 9 seconds. You could see these GPUs are getting pretty well utilized and the temperature's under control. This orange line is showing the, so we're showing a couple of things. That's showing the accuracy. The blue line, which was the earlier one, that dropped, that was the loss, and then you see the number of epochs going. So this is what we want to see, that very quickly we have shot up and we're hitting a high amount of accuracy. So then as soon as this finishes, which shouldn't be more than a couple of more seconds.
So we're also seeing a couple of metadata on the right-hand side. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. So we are seeing like the memory, the utilization.
Yep, exactly. So this is what I was saying before. So you could see that in deep learning, it's a task that is very parallel, so it can easily go beyond the scope of a single GPU. So the fact that we have 4 here, it just takes a different portion of the data, a different portion of the kernel that it's working on, and it sends it to the different GPUs. So you end up seeing close to linear scaling across these GPUs. And you can also see that the utilization, these are very good numbers. So what you're ending up seeing is a topology that's been set up by the Azure guys that's very optimal for deep learning. You have a very nice ratio of interconnect, CPU power, and GPU power. And so now this has just completed, so you have watched this happen in real time. And then what I can do is I can actually pick something. So this is just a path on here, and this is gonna be just a number that is 3, and we're gonna see if it gets classified correctly. We do want to make sure very quickly in real time we can tell, okay, well, was the data we pulled actually good? So it's uploading it from my machine, sending it up to the cloud, and looks like 3 has been predicted at 100%. And if you're, you know, into deep learning and you want to see sort of these statistics, they're all there, which is very good when you don't get the right result, so you can start understanding what hasn't happened properly. But but it's just an example of something that previously wasn't really feasible. And so this entire field of AI that's been driven by deep learning has been made possible because of GPUs coming
right.
in there.
So this is 50,000 images, right?
Yeah.
So like we can imagine, like you can start extrapolating this stuff out to like a bigger organization, right?
Correct.
That may have millions or tens of millions of content or
right.
items or images or video, audio, whatever, right? If you're doing speech training, natural language detection and things like that, right?
Exactly. We all know about the data deluge that happens today. And so just like I was showing you before, number of tweets, you can look at amount of video uploaded every single day. I mean, everything is being generated in massive quantities. And if you have some order and some structure to it, you can start really making good decisions, actionable decisions.
Fantastic. Cool. What else do we have in the bag?
So, deep learning is one thing, but NVIDIA has had a background in graphics as well. So the M60 instances that you guys offer, the VMs, they offer fantastic visualization performance. So what I'm going to show here is Rhino with NVIDIA Iray. And what I have is a drill. And what I want to show here is the ability for you to have a mobile workforce that can access this type of content and see from wherever they go in a level of fidelity that wasn't possible. So what I have here is this drill in Iray's rendered format that existed in the past. And now I'm going to show you what can happen when you couple it in with the power of our GPUs. So I'm going to switch it to Iray. And now you can see real-time sort of raycasting, ray tracing of this drill. And this is a fully an object that can be manipulated. And so you now can have a workforce from anywhere access this level of detail and be working on something the way it actually would physically be.
So in the back, we're seeing some utilization there too, right?
Yeah, so what I'm trying to show also in the background, which I should have highlighted, is this up here is the GPU utilization. And because now the CPU is no longer relegated to doing this task, you can see the CPU is just sort of, you know, ticking along nicely around like 25 to 30%, so it can be left for other tasks. And so again, this is with Iray. These are actually physically modeled materials. So this uses our V-Materials library, so the plastics would be correct plastics, the metals would be correct. So you can get an idea of that when someone needs to go and create someone, instead of having to look at it in that previous view I showed you, click render, go off, get coffee, or you know, go home and then come
back
the next day, you can work with this in real time.
So this would be like, you know, if I looked at the Architectural Digest and I looked at some really awesome interior, that potentially could be a photorealistic
correct.
Rendering, right?
And this is running on a machine with a single M60. You guys have offerings that I believe go up to four
go
M60s.
Up to four, yeah.
So you
yeah.
could, and then on top of that, what you can do here is our Iray program has a server component of it too, which can sit on a K80 machine, for example. And then you could basically say, hey, I want to offload compute to the K80 boxes, and it will go connect over there, fire up the job there. And then so you can even leave this GPU purely for the viewport, just for looking at the image, manipulating it. And then for higher quality or different renders, you can send it off to another machine. So all very possible because of your fast interconnect and the fact that you offer two different types of instances.
Cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to, last one I'm going to show. Is
let me switch back.
Alrighty. So what we're seeing here is about one. This is called a scientific visualization. This is a tornado. It's about 1 terabyte of data being accumulated to create this model. And what this is used for, this was used to determine what forms a tornado. So all this data goes into these very large models to start figuring out what is it that make different classifications of tornadoes extremely dangerous. Now, the reason why this is important is because humans are visual animals, right? We look at our data visually. We can, if you let's say in your mind you try to think of the Eiffel Tower, what does your brain do? It goes and it makes an image of it. You think of what it looks like. And that's because we are very visual. And so what this does is this lets, instead of someone looking at large quantities of data that they have to mine through a SQL database or something, they can visually see it. And they can manipulate it. And this is something that on over 500 nodes of CPUs took several weeks to do. And this is now possible in a real-time fashion. And so this lets researchers actually take the hypothetical and start making real-world assessments, aka in this scenario, what makes a tornado dangerous and where should people, you know, not be.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sagar, for, you know,
yep. Thank you.
Doing this. And this kind of, yeah. Please give him a hand. So this sort of brings us into, you know, the second half of the offering, which is, you know, Sagar sort of touched on a little bit, which was the M60. You know, this is again, you know, just as important as our K80 offering. And essentially, you know, from a size perspective, it's the same configuration, but just swapped out with an M60 card instead. Again, M60 is a dual GPU design, so, you know, it's a single card with two GPUs on it. And we expose it a similar way. So 1, 2, and 4, or half a card, one card, two cards. Obviously, we don't have the fourth component there, which is the backend network, because this offering is mainly a visualization offering. On the bottom there, you see something there called NVIDIA Grid. And this is part of one of our things that we are doing or offering as part of this M60 card is the fact that we're enabling NVIDIA Grid to run natively on our VM. So it's basically launch a VM, you know, install your driver, and you're good to go. There's nothing else to do. And what it really allows you to do is it allows you to run desktop accelerated applications. So you want to run Photoshop, you want to run, if I'm an engineer, again, I talked about, you know, the engineer scenario where if I'm an automotive engineer, I need to, you know, do some simulation, or I want to design my stuff in CATIA or Petrel. If I'm, you know, oil and gas, you're doing reservoir modeling, I need to have a really high fidelity experience. And so, you know, the great thing about this is this will enable this out of the box. So this is not available anywhere else. If I'm, you know, again, if I'm a designer working on the next, you know, Marvel movie or something like that, I can just spin this up, run my app, and, you know, I can access it anywhere I want. So, you know, as part of this sort of journey of visualization, you know, you may have also attended some of the RDP sessions. You know, we've also worked internally with the remote desktop team to make sure that, you know, we're not only making sort of, you know, technical leaps in, you know, the hardware segment, but we're also doing it in from a remoting segment too. So we've worked with internally with our RDP team to make sure that they've sort of utilized some of this capability. And one of the important things about our GPUs, and I've put it there a little bit, so I'll explain it, is remote desktop utilizes DDA. So DDA stands for Discrete Device Assignment. It's part of our server 2016 launch. You may have heard this around in some of the other you know, server sessions, but essentially what it allows us to do is it allows us to take the GPU and essentially do a hardware pass through directly to the guest. So your guest can be Linux, Windows, or whatever, and you'll essentially have a dedicated GPU in your hands. And so you can even, you know, if you're on a Windows machine, you can launch the device manager, open up the display drivers, and you'll see a GPU right there. So that's kind of the power that we're talking about here, where we give you direct access to it. And RDP utilizes that to accelerate itself. And obviously, you know, the best sort of experience you're going to get that is if you're running Server 16. And on the client side, if you're running, you know, Windows 10 or a Mac, they have the preview versions of that available. So, you know, I recommend you go check that out as well when you get a chance. So that brings me to my second special guest. I'd like to sort of invite Randy from Teradici, who's going to showcase some of the more visual aspects of the M60. So, you know, Randy, please go ahead.
Can you all hear me, or are we going to? It's on. There we go. Awesome. We're getting better at this.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to switch because they're on the same channel. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Can I have your clicker? All right. Well, thank you guys for coming. Kind of interesting, this room. I don't know if these people know that there actually are people over here and vice versa. It's kind of interesting. So I'm excited to be here to talk about the technology and the partnership we have with Microsoft for delivering visualization. Teradici, if you don't know about us, was founded 12 years ago and really focused on delivering remoted workstation experience. And since we launched our first products 9 years ago, we've kind of been the leader in remoting workstation experience, and we're really excited to finally be able to bring this capability to the cloud. Now, one of the questions I always get asked is, so what sets Teradici apart? And what it is our PCFRIP protocol that is used for remoting. And these are the four things we highlight as being the unique aspects of the protocol and what sets it apart. The first part of it is that it was one of the first truly host-rendered protocols. So that basically means we take the frame buffer that the GPU generates and grab it directly and operate on it, as opposed to, getting somewhere up inside the stack or requiring the client to do some of the rendering. The second thing is what's really the most important piece of this is that we actually take that frame buffer and we analyze it and determine which sections of the screen need which types of compression. So we don't use a single codec to compress the whole screen like a video codec would do. And that's very important, as we'll talk about in another slide, on because computer graphics and workstation applications are very different from what video codecs were designed to do. We also developed the technology on top of UDP rather than TCP, because this is an interactive protocol. Unlike video streaming, where you're basically just watching Netflix or whatever, this one, when you click a button, you want something to respond immediately. So the latency of interactivity is very high. And so UDP is the protocol used for voice over IP and video conferencing. And so the protocol is designed for the interactivity. And of course, security is just immensely important for this, because you're now sending potentially sensitive data across the network. And so everything is always encrypted end to end. So why is this important? As I said, PCFRIP was designed specifically for computer applications. And computer applications have a lot of interesting characteristics. A lot of times the screen's not changing, like right now, it's not changing at all, right? And everything on this screen was computer generated. It wasn't a natural image. So that's very different from what video codecs were designed for. They were typically designed for things that were created, captured from a camera. Often, very rarely are they static, because who wants to watch a movie or a TV show in which nothing changes, right? And so the design point is very different for that. And so that's why we use the multiple codecs, because you want to use different compression on text and graphics than you do on natural images. And what that allows us to do, a couple of other things, besides the enhanced image quality, which you can kind of see in this diagram in the bottom here. The image on the right, you can see that the red wireframe is blurrier in an H.264 compression than it is with PCFRIP, and that's because we're using the correct codec for wireframe as opposed to a natural image compression. It also allows us some other optimizations. It allows us, when you're using things that have lots of text and graphics, we use dramatically less bandwidth to deliver that. So it's kind of ironic. We have higher quality and lower bandwidth, which is kind of unique characteristic. And we're also able to be more efficient in the CPU utilization. So we save more of that CPU for the applications. So what we're going to be demonstrating is a product that we just announced last week called Cloud Access Software. It's a software version of the technology that we've had around for a while and used by several other of our partners, and it's now available for anybody to buy and install on top of their NV-Series instances. Now, it could also be used on-prem on Server 2016, so it allows you to do hybrid solutions. Obviously, optimized for NVIDIA Grid, which is what's in these instances. And in Azure, the support is going to be for Server 2016 as well as today Linux Ubuntu instances. The software itself works on Red Hat and CentOS, but we're...
Yeah, so we will have additional sort of, Linux distros and things. So for the Linux distributions, we've had to make a change to make sure that, the performance we're sort of aiming for on the DDA side with the server 16 capability. We've had to sort of make sure that those capabilities are in the distros as well. So our vendors are, you know, working really hard to have that support in the next sort of coming releases. So as of today, these are the OSs that are supported from a Teradici standpoint. And then again, you know, we'll have additional vendors come on board, you know, in the next few weeks and months as we get closer to general availability and when we come out of preview.
Thanks, Carl. And then from accessing it from a client perspective, we basically allow you to access it from anywhere. You know, obviously from a Windows client, but also Mac, iOS, Android, Chrome. And one thing that's unique for us is what we call our zero clients, because we've taken the protocol and actually implemented it in a custom silicon chip that decodes the protocol. And so the zero client, there's actually no operating system or applications running on that zero client. So it's really very simple to manage, highly secure, and of course, because it's implemented in silicon, it's the highest performing option on here. But again, you have the flexibility to use whatever you want. Support up to 4 displays, up to 4K, any screen topology. You can direct connect, and we have several brokering partners that allow you to broker the solution as well. So let's get into some specific examples. Oops, there it goes. You know, why is this important? We've talked about some of this, but there's a lot of commonality, common themes we see of what businesses find this attractive. And so I'm going to use CAD, computer-aided design, as an example. So imagine you are a car or automobile manufacturer, and you have very large designs. They're obviously highly proprietary. You don't want your car designs to get out. You may be having third parties do pieces of those designs. And what's really nice about Azure is these models are big, so you need lots of storage. You've got to do crash simulations, so you need lots of compute, or you may need to do fluid dynamics calculations, whatever. You've got lots of storage, lots of compute. Azure is perfect, but what about the engineers and the designers that are actually developing and designing that vehicle or that car or that airplane? Well, they need to be able to run their CAD applications, which are workstation applications. And so what you want to be able to do is move those same workstation applications right next to all the data and compute so that you're not having to shuffle those large files around. You're just shipping the pixels down to the displays. And that's simpler, more secure, and a lot more flexible. And that's what that we're able to do. So that the folks that are having to create come into the NV instances and do their work just like they would on a physical workstation, except with some of the client devices I talked about. And likewise, the people that need to review, they need to manufacture it, do prototyping, whatever, can pull the data down as well. And it's all staying in one place and staying secure and leveraging the capabilities of Azure.
So this kind of brings a good point here. So in this case, right, everything stays in the cloud, right?
Yes.
So like before, right, we had to transfer data. You know, we design some stuff, and then we keep moving data, ingress, egress. Now, if the designer is actually designing all that stuff in the cloud, it just stays in the cloud, right? So the data movement part goes away, right? You could use a clustered file system, attach it to your VM, and you're good to go.
Yeah, the technology has come where it's dramatically easier to ship pixels than it is to ship the data that you're working on. So let's do some demos. How do we switch over here? All right, yep.
Good.
Yes.
Is this just for Azure now, or will it eventually be Azure Stack?
It'll work with Azure Stack as well. It can do hybrid.
So one of the things that was in the previous slide from a Teradici standpoint is if you at the top of the slide, and I think some of the keynotes mentioned it, is as part of Azure Stack, you can now see the marketplace, right? And as part of the marketplace, you know, Teradici will be available as an extension. So from Azure Stack, you'll be able to just go and search, and you know, whenever we actually do the release, then you'll be able to just go ahead and install that on your on-prem as well. So it just all is seamless, the same API, everything. We'll just keep the questions till the end.
Thanks. All right, so we're going to start. This is a gaming demo. We're running the Unigine Heaven gaming application here. This is You can see up in the, if you look carefully in the top right corner, you can see it says Tesla M60 on there. And this is actually running in the Azure data center in San Antonio, Texas, over the show floor network. So it's pretty cool that it looks pretty good up here. It looks even better if you were sitting in front of a big screen and working close
on your Mac, right?
And this, by the way, I'm running this on my Mac just to show the flexibility. But you know, having your employees run games, at lunchtime is probably not the most interesting enterprise application. But this is another example. So, for example, my son works at the Microsoft Coalition Studio, where Gears of War 4 is coming out on October 11th. So,
can't wait to play that.
And I can't even get an advanced copy, so don't ask. But they're in the very last stages of releasing this game. And for those of you who know how game development works, this is the stage where you just bring in tons of people to play the game and find bugs. And so what Microsoft has to do in that case is they're sending up workstations and Xboxes and bringing in lots of people and having them do their testing for, you know, a few month period, and then they have to tear it all back down and go away. Well, now that this capability will be available for the next release of the game, what they could do instead is just spin up the NV instances for all of these people. They can have them located anywhere coming in and still have the security of knowing that that game's not going to leak out before October 11th and do that capability.
So here's a question, right? And this is probably one that's going to be asked afterwards, is like, how much bandwidth, right, do I need? Now, this is a VM sitting in our San Antonio preview data center, right? And you can see there's the frames per second. It's kind of like hovering around 100 or so. It's going up and down. What kind of bandwidth, like, do I need to be able to do that? And I can imagine that if I'm an enterprise, I've got a better, you know, bandwidth connection, I'll be able to utilize this. But is there a number?
Yeah, so the PCMYP protocol, again, is different from a video codec in that it only encodes things when things are changing. When this would stop, the actual bandwidth that it would use would be, you know, like 5 kilobits or less. It can be very bursty, but in this particular case, you know, you can see this is constantly changing, and it's a full 1080p screen. So this is probably consuming about 50 megabits. But the demos we're going to do later here probably peak at 10 megabit kind of thing. And if you're running Office applications, you're in the hundreds of kilobits. So it really depends. And if you're sharing it between, you know, if you have a bunch of people sharing a link, they're probably not all using the same bandwidth at the same time.
Great, great. So this is cool. What else can we actually interact with? What can we show?
All right. Let me stop this one. If I can.
Mac problems.
It is. All right. There's the credits. All right, let's go to another entertainment type solution. This is the folks that do TVs and movies. And again, they have a very similar situation to the CAD thing that I talked about. A movie can be multi terabytes. They've got to have a lot of compute to do the animation and special effects. And so the cloud is really, really nice for them because they can burst to render. They got terabytes of storage. And same problem. What about the video editors and the animators? They need to be able to run their applications and get access to that without having to pull the data back down out of the cloud. And again, we can do that by basically running their applications in an NV series. So here, this is Adobe Premiere, which is a video editing application, probably one of the more popular ones. And we're going to do a little video editing. And if anybody's actually good at doing Premiere, you'll probably laugh at my skills. But this is a little different than the Unigine Heaven that we just did, which used the pixel shaders to do 3D rendering. I don't know if you can actually see the text here on the screen there, but this is actually using the CUDA part, the compute part of the M60 to do special effects on the GPU. So that's another use.
So that's cool, right? So, like, you know, generally the way we kind of, we'll have a couple of slides later to talk about it is the K80 is, you know, great for CUDA, deep learning, all of that stuff, supports CUDA and OpenCL. But in this case, you're using an M60 for some CUDA work as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
because the M60 support DirectX, OpenGL, but you're also using it for CUDA.
Yeah. Now, this is a video application. I just want one thing you need to notice is 3/4 of this machine or this screen is actually text, right? So this is why it's really important to have a display protocol that's good at delivering the text as well as the graphics and animation. And you can see that moves pretty smoothly. I can grab it and scan it. Here we go. This scan through to where I want to go do edit stuff or whatever. And let's say I was reviewing this with my VP of marketing, and she said, we really want to highlight the security of our solution. Can you highlight this lock with, make it blue or something so it kind of stands out? Which, wow, it actually worked. Okay. And then, now the CUDA is going to insert that on every frame for us, and voila, my VP of marketing is now happy. So. Anyway, so that's again the kind of the power of what you can do from the cloud with for in the media and entertainment space, and we're seeing all the major and even most of the mid-major ones are very interested in moving this stuff all to the cloud and working at it that way. Again, something that wasn't possible before we had this capability. All right, let's do one more demo. Let's go. We talked about kind of high-end CAD stuff a little while ago. Let's go a little simpler because, you don't have to be designing an aircraft or an automobile to get the benefits from this. We'll pretend we're an architectural firm, and we're going to run AutoCAD, which is the most probably volume-wise the most popular CAD software out there, and used by a lot of smaller machine shops and architectural firms or whatever. And you can see, here again, we've got, this is, nice 2D, really crisp text and graphics going on here. But let's switch over to something a little more complicated. There we go. All right, so let's say I'm going to remodel this apartment. Now, this is kind of the standard way it looks without GPU acceleration. And let me show you what happens when we turn on the GPU. Unfortunately, the screen is really small up here.
Super high res.
Super high res. All right, let's see if I can. There we go. That's still not on.
So while you're doing that, perhaps you can sort of describe what would happen if you turned it on.
Yeah, you'll see the GPU will now do all of this lighting effect. Here we go. There we go. Okay. And voila. So now you actually see what the lighting looks, and then you can show it off to whoever you are showing this to and the client or whatever.
So the cool thing here is, right, like you can start to imagine some of the cool scenarios here where potentially I'm doing some of this rendering here and perhaps I'm streaming it directly to like a HoloLens or a VR rig, right? So this is the kind of cool stuff you'll see like maybe perhaps at a retail store.
Right. And so, I could go in here and, easily change the flooring or change the walls or whatever and to whatever the client wants it to be.
Can we change the flooring?
I can find the materials menu. It's not showing up there for some reason.
or not. I do like wood. It's okay.
It's all right. Now, where did it go? Anyway.
I can live with laminate. It's fine.
I'll actually show you what it looks like because I have my iPad connected to another instance where the changes have already been made.
Oh, okay. So this is getting into some of the stuff we talked about earlier, right? Like, imagine you're sort of artist or engineer or whatever, right? Being able to log in remotely with an iPad, an iPhone, whatever, Surface Book.
Right. So I'm logging in with my iPad to the same data center. You know, the password rules at Microsoft are insane.
We like security. So
anyway. Oh, and it wants to restart later, please.
Okay.
So you can see here, I probably can't see it very well, but
you can probably come up a little bit later and I'll be glad to look out.
It to you. But this, so I'd be able to take my iPad to the client's house, say, here it is, and they say, oh yeah, I love the what you've done, and let's go with it or not. And instead of having to lug a big hefty laptop or whatever along. Now, I'll be honest with you, as you noticed, I've been using a mouse up here. iPads don't support mice, and most of these kind of applications work a lot better with it. So I would actually recommend you bring your Surface, but if you want an iPad to do it, it works just great. So
cool, great. So that was fantastic. Thank you so much.
And you know, the other thing is, as an architect or if I get a call from my client on the weekends, you know, I just pull out whatever device I have at home, make the changes. I don't have to drive into the office. I can be on vacation at the beach and do something or whatever. You can really work 24/7 now, right? If you feel like it. So
fantastic.
Lots
Thank
of flexibility. So anyway, so we're very excited about the capabilities that the combination of Azure instances, NVIDIA GPUs, and Teradici Cloud Access software are going to allow people to very efficiently, flexibly, and securely access these very graphically rich and high quality images and applications remotely and do stuff that you just couldn't do efficiently in the past. So
perfect. Thank you so much, Randy.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. So that was a little flavor of what's sort of possible on these things. I want to stress the fact we are in preview, but I totally encourage you guys to go sign up on gp.azure.com if you do want access to the preview. We are going to be announcing details in a few months in regards to how and when we're going to be coming out of the preview. Additionally, don't forget there are two separate offerings here. One is sort of the grid-powered M60, which is really the high-fidelity workstation in the cloud-like experience, supports OpenGL, DirectX, and then the NC, which is the compute part. So the data crunching, the number crunching, and if you want to do artificial intelligence, supports CUDA and OpenCL. That's fantastic. You can again string them together for a long-running job or a very highly scalable job. Additionally, if you want to find out more about the IRA and the grid capabilities, there are some links in there. Obviously, the session is recorded, so you can check it out later. There's an interesting one. There's two things that I want to point out as well. Is you can obviously download the Teradici trial today and use it on the Azure clusters on the M60, and that's available there. And again, the link is there. And then finally, Azure Batch Recipes. So we talked a little bit about the scalability and kind of the scheduling and running of the artificial of the deep learning jobs. And so what we've done is actually we've released some GitHub code that actually does some of this number recognition, where you can actually go look at the code, run it side by side with a GPU and a CPU, and see how quickly these things run and how much data is required. And then you can actually go and paint and draw a number, and it will recognize it. So it'll kind of give you an idea of what the scenarios are, and really sort of get started quickly. So you can download the code, run it in under sort of 10 minutes. So I'd really recommend you check that out. And Azure Batch is a free service on Azure today, so you can spin up an account and go crazy. So that's kind of really it. I hope this session was useful. Again, that's my handle. If you want to go ahead and ask questions or anything, or direct message me or whatever, and you know, we can definitely chat a little bit more. And please go ahead and evaluate. If you like the session, give us a good rating. If you don't like the session, don't rate. So, you know, that's good. And I'll just open it up for questions.
This works. I can speak loud. I got a comment and a kind of a warning. You guys use this for very nice eye candy. I'm a security guy. I use it for password cracking. Right. So GPUs work really, really well for password cracking. So that's kind of a use case I haven't seen much, but it's I see this becoming very, very important.
I call it hashing.
Yes, yes, exactly. The warning that kind of comes with this is, as a security guy, I probably can't think of a better target for hackers. So
absolutely, yeah.
People really have to be conscious that don't be sloppy with your security with this interface, because hackers are going to be all over this, and they're going to be using
exactly.
your resources. You're going to pay
yep.
for that. So yeah. So
that's absolutely, you know, one of our major things, sort of, right? And it's not just the GPU, right? I mean, it's just across the stack, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're in preview, is, you know, because of that reason, is we want to make sure that every little thing is kind of checkmarked before we actually go into general availability, because that then has SLAs and production timelines and security being sort of the prize zero part of it, right?
I have a question. I know that your focus was the cloud. What if we wanted to run this locally on-prem? So if we stand up a 2016 server now with a...
Yes, absolutely. So 2016, I think, went general availability this week, I think. But you can absolutely take server 16 and spin up the entire stack on your private cloud if you need. You can use DDA, the exact same technology that we're using to expose the GPUs. Yeah, absolutely.
I have like a combined question for you and for the guy from Teradici about, right now what we have is we have like about 6 UCS M230 servers or something, I don't remember, with NVIDIA K2 grid cards and Citrix Zen server, and that's how we're delivering VDI desktops to our designers. We're an architecture firm, and we use Revit, and that's the primary, plus the Autodesk suite and, you know, 3ds Max. Anyway, how would this help us replace our local stack of VDI servers with the K2? How does it compare with what we've got now? And then how can we get it cloud-based,
right,
if that even makes sense?
So maybe I can speak
too,
a little bit to the VDI type question I see happening there. And then maybe Terry, Randy can talk to a little bit about the technology side. I want to stress the fact that this is not a, I wouldn't really call this a full-blown user desktop personalizable experience. This is, I am an engineer and I need an app for like 8 hours or something like that, and I want to spin it up for a couple of hours to do some of the stuff. And for example, if I'm an automotive engineer and I went ahead and, you know, ran some simulation on an LS-Dyna, and then I had an output and I needed to go look at it in the cloud so I don't have to go back to my desktop, I can go do that. Now, it is stretching into some of that territory, yes, but it's definitely meant for more of a high-end workstation sort of scenario. You can obviously do VDI, but again, the Windows 10, there's some challenges there from a licensing perspective, but that's kind of where the scenario is headed.
This, obviously, you can run Revit up here on these instances, or you could do it on-prem with Server 2016. Doesn't really matter. The difference is obviously the K2, the M60 is about twice the power of a K2, but right now it's direct assigned, so you get the whole. Whereas I don't know if you're virtualizing the K2 or not. Okay. All right.
Right. So you'll get sort of similar performance. So DDA basically is sort of our internal testing anyways, giving us up to sort of 90 to 95% bare metal comparison. So we are getting really, really good. I mean, you saw it just on the, I mean, again, that was a demo and it's a separate scenario, but you saw sort of the frames per second just on a conference network, right, all the way from San Antonio. And, you know, one thing I do want to point out is these M60s, we're going to be deploying this across the world, right? So you saw probably a bunch of slides on the number of data centers we have. This thing is going to go everywhere. So that means there's a very high chance that this is going to be closer to you so that the latency, you know, is reduced. It's in preview right now. We haven't announced anything yet, but the announcement will be coming shortly. It is not in preview, but if you go on the pricing page, it's right now like crazy, crazy discounted. So I would recommend you go check it out, and sort of if you look at the price, you'll sort of make your own decision there.
Well, talking about licensing, how is Microsoft dealing with the M60 user agreement licensing?
Right, so that's a partnership that's between NVIDIA and Microsoft. So that means that, you know, once you launch an M60 VM, all you have to do is, you know, there'll be a grid driver that will be provided, and then essentially you install the driver and you're good to go. There's nothing on your end to do. So the licensing cost is actually incorporated into the VM compute cost. So if you spin up the VM for an hour and you pay Azure the money for that hour, that covers the whole lot. Like, you don't have to worry about it at all. Good, yeah.
Good. Thank you. I got one over here.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's okay. So I saw on your presentation you were doing DDA.
Sorry, could you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, on the presentation you were showing DDA as the way of assigning the graphics to your VM. Do you have any plans to support SRIOV down the road sometime where you could assign VFs to the
Right. No concrete plans. We're obviously, in preview, so our sort of focus is to make sure that the cluster stabilized and we get to sort of production and general availability. But that's definitely, it's on our minds, but there's no concrete announcement or nothing that I can share at this stage.
Yeah. Okay. Question about the Teradici. So for use that on Azure VM, do we need to buy it separately or it will be available through Azure, like following the pay-by-use model?
So currently, as it will be offered as a VM extension, but it will be a bring-your-own license. So you'll have to have a license from Teradici for the software.
Okay. How about the clients?
Clients are free. Okay. Downloaded free from the website.
Okay. Thank you.
And the thing is, with the extension, what you're going to be able to do is you're going to be able to, if you visit some of the other sessions, you're going to be able to sort of string together what we call an ARM template, Azure Resource Manager. And you basically describe a JSON file and you say, here's the VM that I want, here's the extension that I want installed, and you just kick go and you're good to go. Yeah, I mean, there's not much to do there.
So is there a plan we can also just use that directly by following the pay-by-use model? Azure for licensing costs.
Yeah, that's one of those things where there's some for the billing support. We're waiting for some additional capability to go. At some point in time, we will offer it so that you'll get billed by the hour or by whatever usage. But that's not a capability that's available to us yet.
It's on your roadmap, right?
It is absolutely. We get a lot of requests for it, so. We're just waiting for the necessary support from Azure for that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, nothing else? Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.